We have a yo-yo champion on Hometown
That's
This Morning
right.
today.
That's right. Kate Strass, good morning. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. How are you?
Good.
Good.
And you go around to schools with yo-yos and show demonstrations, and you have a goal behind all this.
Yeah. I go around. I've been teaching kids about the environment. Actually, I've only been in one school so far, mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, it didn't go so hot. In fact, it was literally a major disaster.
Oh, no.
Because basically, the kids didn't like my stories, and it's no surprise because they were running around most of the time. And I'm sorry, I think there's something to be said about how kids are brought up these days. And I come from a home that believed in spanking. And
let's. How about you show us some yo-yo demonstrations? I mean, you are the yo-yo champ. You brought a yo-yo with you, right?
See, you have the up and down.
Okay.
Okay, pretty basic.
Uh-huh.
And then...
Oh,
you all right?
Yeah. Okay, let's see.
How long have you been practicing yo-yo?
Since
you were younger?
When did Schubert Dip come out?
TBTL. You know something? That was pretty funny. You should think about being a comedian. The comedy fraternity of show business is a fast-paced, nutty, funny world. There are always openings for good comedy talent.
If anyone touches my man Kenny G, I'm gonna be up in their face and I'm gonna start some Sorry, I know that you don't swear, but like, I love to say
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
Well, hello, good morning, and welcome, everybody, to a Monday edition of TBTL.
Gotta do it again, right now.
The show that just might be too beautiful to live. My name's Luke Burbank. I am your host.
I can't believe you're still on the air.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, Perch Top, Alabama Hill, in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, looking out over Lake Whatcom and Squalicum Mountain. It is going to be a gorgeous, sunny Monday here in Bellingham, which I am excited about for the afternoon for recreating outside. But for right now, of course, that does mean it is very, very warm here in the broadcast center. And really, this entire side of the house, I was doing the dishes this morning at like 8 a.m., and I was sweating because of the sun that was coming in through the kitchen windows. Also, I may just have a medical condition. It's unclear. What is clear is that we have got episode 3,194 in a collector's series ready to go.
Let the fun begin.
Amazon.com is renaming a sports arena in Seattle.
I figured he had to be in sport, but he wasn't in sport.
They're calling it Climate Pledge Arena, which is a very good thing to do, but a very weird name for a sports arena. We'll talk about that and all the lengths they're going to try to make it environmentally friendly. Speaking of things that Jeff Bezos is sort of associated with, an announcement came out recently that they have officially stopped production on the Segway scooter.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
People with quasi-police type jobs all over the nation, people tasked with guarding malls and parking garages and other such things. Those people that you see, you think, are they a cop? And then you look closer and you go, not officially, are weeping because, of course, the Segway was the main conveyance for that kind of business. We will remember the technology that was at one point allegedly going to, quote, change the way they design cities. And now they're not making them anymore. We'll do that plus emails and V-mails. We'll do all of it with the help of this young man, the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He has been just putting in work on all kinds of cybersecurity and HR training videos for our parent company, and he's learned some things.
Stop, stop, stop. That's a bad hug.
He is Andrew Walsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. I have some things I would like to get off my chest here at the beginning of the show. Nothing bad, by the way. I realize that had a negative tone. I didn't mean to take it. But here are some things I'd like to share with you. The meaning of opaque is unclear. I wasn't going to get a brain transplant, but then I changed my mind. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Has my mom been texting you some good laughs? Part two.
No, but my dad has been emailing me. What's the subject line on this? Words, double meanings. Let's see here. There's a whole list. It's pretty good. Have you ever tried eating a clock, Luke? It's very time consuming. A man tried to assault me. Yes, it's time. A man tried to assault me with milk, cream, and butter. How dare he? These are not bad, by the way. I would like to say right
at
the top.
That one kind of got me.
Yeah, no, these are actually not bad. I'm reading a book about anti-gravity. I can't put it down. So good. Anyway, yeah. I could just sprinkle these out. When there's a slow moment in the show, let's maybe not burn them all at the top here. I can just kind of sprinkle them in. Looks like I got a list of 26. Ah, yes. The classic list of 26 jokes that is making its way around the internet.
That's what they say about comedy.
That's right. The rule of 26s.
Is there something going on right now in the air with all of the, you know, pandemic stuff or the social unrest that has parents wanting to brighten up their children's day with lists of jokes like that? Because it's kind of odd that my mom would post one in our family text chain and then Bob Walsh would send you some.
I know. Yeah, my dad was sending me. He wanted to send. This was late on Friday night, I want to say, maybe Saturday night. And when I say late, I mean getting near 10 o'clock. Although he is in the East Coast. That is pretty late his time. He sent me a video he wanted me to see of some, I don't know, some video trickery that somebody had edited, and he thought of me, and then he said, well, while I'm forwarding you stuff, how about this? I got a kick out of this. I think he said some of these are really clever, which they are. I agree, they are clever. I do like it, though, how perfect. I mean, these are classic dad jokes, and they were sent to me by my dad, which really seems perfect.
Right. Yeah. You know, I was sort of low-key stalking you this weekend.
Oh.
Do you know that, Andrew?
No. What did you see? What did you like?
I said it was low key.
Okay.
So I didn't get to see much. No, I was on Friday, of course, I was down in Grand Mound, Washington, and also Tenino, Washington, working on that TV story. And when it was all said and done, I started driving back up to Bellingham on Friday. And even though we are in the midst of a pandemic and, you know, business has been largely shut down or many people are working from home, it does not seem to have impacted the traffic on Interstate 5 on a Friday afternoon, because it was still pretty rough. Oh, by the way, when I was driving down there, yes, this is the part of the show where I relay different traffic situations I found myself in recently. On my way down to do the story in the first place, I was driving through Tacoma, Washington, which our residents, I should say our listeners who are residents of Tacoma, know this well. Never not traffic. Like there is a, they started a construction project 44 years ago when I was born, and it continues to this day. I have never driven through the city of Tacoma, Washington on Interstate 5 when there has not been a massive construction project. But I was in the opposite direction of traffic. So on the other side of the barrier, there was one of those like, there's a certain kind of newish BMW that's almost looks like a race car. Almost kind of looks like a Formula One car. It's very wide and low to the ground.
Okay.
And the thing was up on the median, and it was cracked about in half. And I was like, you know 100% that the guy, and by the way, you know it was a guy who was driving that thing, was driving about 120 miles an hour on a Wednesday afternoon. It was like I could just I knew exactly why that crash had happened based on the type of vehicle that had crashed. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm overly generalizing, but this was not a grandmother who was driving to you know, her socially distanced bingo. This was some guy who, for whatever reason, felt the need for speed and had literally destroyed his very fancy BMW, and I was there for it.
Do you think he was late for his appointment at the Emerald Queen Casino? Is this the area that we're talking about?
It's exactly there. Did you actually find, did you Google this?
No, I just, when I think of that, when I think of that bottleneck, I always think of staring at the big EQC, that big green sign. I can't, you know, I always associate those two things. In fact, I always wonder if the traffic is caused not by the traffic going into the EQC, but somehow they have an agreement that will create a bunch of traffic here so people will stare at our sign and will plant ideas in their heads about how
it's
great
the plandemic,
casinos
bro.
Are. It's a plandemic, yeah. So why were you stalking me, though?
Oh, yeah, let's get back to that. Oh, so I was driving back home, and the traffic was so bad on I-5 through Seattle, like, that I just was like, you know what? I'm not in any particular rush. I am going to just do a little, I'll do the scenic route. So I jumped off of the freeway around Capitol Hill. I wended my way around Capitol Hill just kind of casually and in no particular rush. The funny part was it took me much longer to do the scenic route than it would have to just be sitting in traffic. Yeah. And so the scenic route ultimately led me to be driving down Roosevelt. And I got to the intersection near Teddy's. And I just said, and it, this was, I'm going to say this was at about 5:30 or 6. And so I said, I'm just going to slowly roll down this street right in front of Teddy's, Andrew's favorite place in the world, and I'm going to stare in there and see if I see my friend Andrew Walsh. And I wasn't even going to come in. I wasn't going to bother you. You get enough LB in your life as a professional sort of thing. So I wasn't going to like force a social engagement on you, but I was curious if I was going to see you in there, and I didn't. But I also had to look quickly because there were cars behind me. Were you in that Teddy's at that hour? And by the way, I don't mean to put your business out on blast. I don't want to like, you know, maybe who knows what you were up to. I'm not trying to pin down your whereabouts, but was there any chance I would have seen you in there?
No, I haven't been. I did go to Teddy's reopened several weeks ago now, and I've been there a couple of times, but trying to keep it few and far between, and I haven't been in there in a week or two. I'm interested in knowing whether or not you were able to see anybody through those windows, because when you roll past Teddy's, it is so dark in there that if there's even a tiny bit of daylight, you can't see inside. One of the many things it has going for it.
The door was open, and that's the only way I was able to see in there. And weirdly, I wanted you to be in there because it just, you know, we're all struggling with this kind of desire for normalcy balanced against a desire for public safety. And there are clearly a lot of places in this country where lack of public safety or lack of good decision making is rearing its ugly head, and we are seeing, you know, awful numbers in terms of transmission of COVID. So it's like the idea, though, of my friend Andrew, you know, you can't sit at the bar anywhere in Seattle, as far as I understand it. But the idea of you in there on a Friday after a long week of podcasting, having a drink and, you know, reading your book or doing whatever, that would have been comforting to me to see. It would have felt like, oh, there are some moments of normal life that are still existing.
Do you almost picture it like you drive by and it's like one of the still frames at the beginning of Cheers? Like I'm toasting and there's like several people around me, almost like a modern Baroque painting sort of. And I'm like, no, I'm saying like, something and somebody throwing their head back in laughter.
No, it's more like that Hopper painting, Nighthawks.
Okay.
Just depressing. Just absolute.
Right,
just
right.
Totally depressing people that are just trying to numb out.
Right.
That's more the vibe I was picking up.
Now what I want you to picture is the a painting of a grown man in the fetal position just rocking himself to sleep in an alleyway behind his apartment. That's what I was actually doing in that moment.
Is that what – did I get any part of that I just tried to wing that it was Hopper and that it was called Nighthawks.
Yeah, Nighthawks. Isn't it Nighthawks at the Diner? I think it's called – or is it just called – maybe it's just called Nighthawks, and I just have added at the diner. And it's almost certainly Hopper, right?
Yes, I know. But did you notice that I said Hopper? I didn't say Edward Hopper because I was like – it was like I was in my own personal version of Jeopardy.
You're absolutely right that it's Nighthawks, by the way. I feel that you've already confirmed that. I thought it might have been Nighthawks at the diner. But yeah, I've always been drawn to that, obviously.
People will do that when you're on Jeopardy. You're trained – to never say the first name, because you don't have to say the first name. And if you just say the last name and you're actually thinking of the wrong person, but it's the same last name, you'll get the credit for it.
Yeah. Dennis Hopper. I believe Dennis Hopper painted this, in fact.
I think Dennis Hopper could have painted this. Don't you feel like Dennis Hopper would be a guy, RIP, who you'd like go up to his like, he'd be like in some kind of funky cabin in, you know, like in Malibu or whatever, and he'd just be like, yeah, I don't have a Dennis Hopper impression, but I'm just going to try it. I've been working on these paintings. That's, I don't know.
A little bit of Giamatti in there, which I like.
Now, I do have a solid Giamatti. I am not drinking Merlot! If my neighbors didn't know that I do a podcast, they definitely do now, because I just screamed I'm not drinking Merlot with both of the windows open.
Or they just think you're watching your favorite movie, because this sounded straight up. I'll tell you what, though. I think that, I mean, not that we need to turn this episode into debating whether or not Dennis Hopper would have been a good painter. I'm not saying that he wouldn't have had some painting chops or that he wouldn't have been drawn to the canvas. I don't see him as a real straight line, clean line, minimalist kind of guy. I see chaos coming from his brush.
You're right. He's not painting Nighthawks.
Mm-mm.
Definitely not what Dennis Hopper is creating. Yeah,
I guess it's a little bit. I mean, how much? But he does. He had a messy mind, right? Like, how much am I? Just like, because he's in Apocalypse Now, right? Yeah, and he's the guy with the camera in Apocalypse Now, and I just wonder, like, how much do I judge him based on the characters he played? But it's probably
Dennis Hopper was really he was the Owen Wilson of his time. Hmm. I feel like they're kind of the same person.
Really. Explain.
I mean, number one, literally the way they talk. They both kind of have a higher voice. They're kind of agitated, but in a kind of lovable way. They actually look kind of the same. Like, get a picture of Dennis Hopper next to a picture of Owen Wilson. I think they physically resemble each other.
I don't know. There's something in the eyes that are a little similar. I wouldn't have gone there, but I can sort of see that. Man, I'm going to say something that I say a lot when this topic comes up amongst my friends, and it's a little bit dark. But man, every now and then I just remember how close we came to losing Owen Wilson, and I treasure him as an actor and as like kind of a member of pop culture. And he just I don't know anything about him, but he just seems like a really sweet guy. I really appreciate his art, and when you think about how many people like that we lose, and we think about the fact that we almost lost him to mental illness, and then you remember that we didn't, and he went on, and he's continuing to make movies. I'm really thankful for that. That's just a corny thing for me to say, but I'm throwing it out there.
There is a video of Owen Wilson making the rounds on TikTok, and it's it's from a few years ago. Actually, I don't know exactly the time period, but it's he's just like hanging out with some skater dudes, and then someone just like bets him that he can't do like this certain skateboarding trick. I had no idea Owen Wilson can skateboard, but also, by the way, not surprised.
Right, yeah, of course.
Like, and he fully goes, like, he fully does, I don't know the terminology around skateboard tricks, but even though I was really into skateboarding as a kid, but I was bad at tricks, he literally just gets on the skateboard and he's like, first try, okay, whatever. And then he just skates up. I do believe he skates goofy footed, which is, that would mean he has his right leg in front on the board, which is unusual. But he just skates, and then he does an ollie, and then he goes up on like a handrail. He basically jumps the skateboard down a long flight of steps and in the air grinds the skateboard. He rides the railing, the handrail of this stairs outside, and then just like lands it, and then just like gets up and high fives someone. Like, he does a very hard skateboard trick as a grown man, probably in this clip of age 35 or older. And that's just something Owen Wilson can do if you bet him money. And it made me very impressed.
Yeah, I thought I was under the impression that this was a new video, so I had to look up his age. He's 51 right now.
But this
is a video from a while back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just Google Owen Wilson skateboard.
Okay, this is the
part
where
we've moved past the part of the show where I describe traffic situations and into the part of the show. Oh, look, it looks like he had some kind of, he might have even had a movie or a show, something called Yeah Right.
Oh, is that what,
where he kind of skateboarded around.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So, he was, you can just tell by this, by this one
Jones
trick he does, he's like,
show
that all makes sense. That all makes a lot of
sense.
But yeah, here we go. Owen Wilson, Reddit. Owen Wilson skateboarding. He blunt sides a handrail first try. That's what I was trying to say, Andrew.
Sure, yeah. Skate or die, dude.
Have you ever blunt sided a handrail on your first try?
I blunt sided in Teddy's one time. They did not let me back for 2 weeks.
And that was the right call, honestly.
Until they got it all cleaned up, yeah.
From everything I read in the police report, that was absolutely the right call.
Yeah.
How was your weekend, by the way?
My weekend was really good. How are the weekends feeling so short? I know that you were spoofing this on Twitter a while back, but like honestly, and this is just like the most boring thing to say or the most basic thing
more
to
boring than traffic talk?
I don't know more. Here's my favorite.
More boring than me Googling Owen Wilson skateboard trick? Literally just me just doing internet searches?
I was going to go back and tighten it up, but I won't because I just want to point out, I think the best part of the show so far has been, if I can have your attention, please, for a moment. Here's the best part of the show. Look it up. Google Owen Wilson skateboarding. That was the best part of the show so far. The sound of you and me tapping our keyboard so that we could Google something that the listeners cannot watch after you described it. But the weekend was good. It flew by.
Yeah, man.
Had a little bit of a social actually on Friday, not when you were stalking me, but a little bit after that, we actually went over to a friend's who had just a couple of people over around a campfire, which was nice. I hadn't had that experience in a very long time. Small little gathering. It almost felt like normal times, except for, you know, it's always the getting there and back. You know, we took a lift for the first time in months and months. And, of course, you know, a lot of rules around that. Masks, windows down, don't look the driver in the eye. I didn't understand that one, but he made it very clear.
Doing all that for years.
So that was kind of an interesting experience. But once we were there, it was great. And like I said, there was three couples who were there and enough room to spread out. And we, you know, were able to hang out outside and it felt normal again until you get in the lift to come home and you have to, you know, put on all of your gear again. But that was really nice and normalizing and it felt good. And then here's though where I am just a terrible human. After having a really, really nice night on Friday night, I remember thinking, actually even saying to Genevieve on Saturday, oh, I'm kind of glad we can just stay home tonight. Like, I've had nothing but, how many months has it been of staying home? I go out for the first time in months. And then I'm like, wow, that was great, but that's all I can take in this weekend. Let's stay home and play Birds, actually, which we did do. The rain came. It was a cold rain on Saturday. And again, I was kind of like, well, guess I can't go outside. We'll just have to tuck in and drink some Bloody Marys and play Birds, actually, which is what we did on Saturday.
Somebody, I saw a clip, again, probably on TikTok, maybe on Twitter, of it's Leo DiCaprio when they're shooting Wolf of Wall Street. And it's like a behind the scenes, you know, sort of clip of them getting ready to do a shot. And so it's that moment where he's just sitting there totally stoically, probably thinking about his lines or getting into character. And it's just like there's all these camera people and makeup and everyone's getting things ready. And it's like, okay, we're going to, you know, action. And then when they hit action, he just suddenly, because it's like he's on, it's a scene where he's like on a trading floor or in one of those office buildings where he's being real, you know, Wolf of Wall Street-y, mm-hmm. like, hey, everybody, da, da. But it's like the difference between him just totally stoically and then action. And then, and the person wrote, me getting ready to go out and socialize.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, and I thought of you when I saw that, because, I mean, I don't know if you're quite that extreme, but I kind of thought of how it seems like it takes a lot of energy and work for you to be in those situations. It's not something that is coming completely naturally.
Well, the sad thing is, and not to get super into my psyche and brokenness this early in the week, but the sad thing is
we usually save that for Thursday.
It's got more of a Thursday vibe, and then you can redeem yourself on Friday. I have it all written down somewhere. A lot of people think this is not scripted, but I wish I could turn it on that quickly. Unfortunately, and this is not the case with this weekend, but unfortunately, if I'm really a grumblepuss about going out, it's really hard for me to warm my way into the social situation. I'm sure you've been there before on times when I'm probably somewhere I don't want to be, and eventually I know I'll get there, but the first half hour can, you know, I'm not the type of guy who jumps headlong into the ice cold swimming pool. I will torture myself by like slowly going in like 1 inch at a time, so it's like miserable mm-hmm. for a half hour. That's what I'm sometimes like in a social situation when I was reluctant to go out.
See, the funny thing is I've hung out with you in real life and then had you say later on, I know I was kind of in a mood when I showed up, and I have never I think you being in a mood it's not that noticeable. Like, even, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think I've never seen you come off as pouty or unhappy in a social situation ever, well, like not even once.
Here's something I shouldn't even tell you this because now you'll look for it. But if I ever come into a room and you're already there and I don't slap you on the back of the head or flip your hat off and say, "What's up, chief?" Mm-hmm. It means I'm in a bad mm-hmm. mood.
Oh, you've been in a bad mood every time we've hung out?
Yes. That's why I'm telling you,
once.
It's bad.
Wow, Andrew, I had no idea.
Yeah, sorry.
Let's get back into this on Thursday.
Yeah, sorry, chief.
Emo Thursdays. Can you call somebody chief? I feel like that's on the line too, right?
That's a good point, but wait. Chiefs, isn't the word chief, it applies to a whole bunch of different positions in society, right? You could be like the chief label maker.
Yeah, chief of police.
Chief of police.
Is chief, that's a good question. Is chief itself a Native American word in its origin? Or is it just a white, not white, but is it like a word that has been applied to the person who is in charge, and therefore we've gone back and applied it? My sense is that word feels inherently Native American to me.
I always thought that the Native Americans appropriated it from label makers, like chief label maker, which was the example uh-huh. that I threw out a second ago, which I don't even know what a chief label maker is or what industry that is necessarily.
Wait, is that an actual product you've used? Is there a
label
maker?
No, I have no idea. I was just trying to think of like who would be in charge of something, a chief what? A chief label maker. That just came out of my brain. I don't think it's a thing. I mean, it's clearly not a thing. Although now I aspire
okay.
to
well,
be
wow.
one.
Look at this. Chief, Middle English from Old French. Chief, chef, based on Latin caput, or head. So it starts out as Latin. I apologize to listener Heidi, our Latin correspondent, who's, you know, once again, I'm stealing work from her. It's originally a Latin word, caput, which means head. Then it goes into Old French and becomes chief or chef. And then it gets into Middle English as chief. So that would mean that it's not a word that is something that was appropriated from Native Americans. That's interesting. I don't think I knew that. Now, will Kansas City, the football team, consider becoming the Kansas City label makers?
I've been signed my petition, man. Mm-hmm. Hey, are you weird about petitions?
As in, do I not sign them?
Yeah.
Yeah, generally not. I mean, well, it depends. Do you mean like when you're going to the grocery store and someone's got a thing, or is it these online things going around?
Online, I've never signed one. It's actually more in person, and I don't know what it is. So goes back a couple of weeks. I was handing out food for the pop-up kitchen, and a volunteer who used to volunteer in the better times with our group kind of showed up. He's a young guy, fresh out of college. And I was wondering why he was there, actually. He hadn't volunteered for anything. I hadn't, you know, I think I might have met him once before. But he was just sort of like kind of milling about while me and this other guy were handing out bags. And then we started talking with him. And he said, yeah, I volunteered here a couple of times. And I think that he was just maybe missing pop-up or missing, I don't know, people or something. So we're talking for a little bit. And he's clearly very active in the community. And he then says, oh, you know, will you sign this thing? And the petition was actually for this, you know, tax Amazon effort, which is something I'm 100% on board with, although the messaging there is kind of problematic. But overall, I'm in favor of the legislation. And he asked me and my partner there if we would sign the petition, and my partner did. And I just said, well, you know, I'd like to read more about it. Now, the thing is, I had read some about it. I mean, I could always read more about it, but I just didn't want to sign it. And I don't know why, which is terrible. I mean, there are advocates who are listening right now being like, this guy literally won't even put his name to his beliefs. But I don't know if it's a holdover from when I think this is it. I think that I took myself seriously as a journalist for a chunk of my life. And I would never have signed anything when I was producing a public radio news show. And obviously, I've spent the better part of the 2000s now giving my opinion over various airwaves and podwaves. So my ideas are out there. There's no objectivity or even veneer of objectivity with me. Yet somehow the idea of signing this petition, like I just don't trust them. I don't know if I'm signing what I'm supposed to be signing. And I didn't want to put my name to it. And I've been thinking about it since.
I think I definitely have had the experience of saying to somebody, I think I need to read a little bit more about this. Which is funny because it's like, it's a very small thing to add your name to one of those. I never thought about the journalistic implications. I probably never have in my life. Were we allowed, are you not supposed to vote when you're a supposedly unbiased journalist? Are you like allowed to vote in national elections?
Well, I think, I mean, allowed is an interesting word, but I mean, yeah, I voted. I think people should vote. I think it's really important.
I mean, based on the morality, the idea would be, yeah, if you're a journalist, like for public radio, maybe you don't come out with who you're going to vote for, but you're allowed. I mean, you know, you, as far as the rules of journalism go, it's not considered bad form to vote. It would be bad form to stridently endorse one candidate or idea sort of publicly.
Or let that influence your reporting, yeah, or not give people the same benefit of the doubt on all sides or what have you. There was a journalist, it wouldn't have been Koppel. There was some journalist who famously did not vote, but I don't think that's a norm.
Have I ever told you that Ted Koppel has weirdly good style?
No.
Like, in real life? Like, Ted Koppel is a friggin' silver fox, dusty fox. When I was in New York, at the home office of CBS Sunday Morning, he does stuff for them, and it would not be uncommon for me to come around a corner and just see Ted Koppel standing there. And I remember when I was a kid, I loved Nightline, but I also thought he was weird looking. Like, I thought he had a massive comb over. He doesn't. His hair just looks like that, but he has like good personal style. Like, he looks like he's kind of out of like a Filson catalog, and he's like a good looking dude. In person, he's fit. He's got like stylish clothing on. I was shocked at how attracted I was to Ted Koppel when I saw him, you know, last year.
You're not the first person to say that. You know what? It just occurred to me. You're colleagues with John Dickerson. You should get me in a room with John Dickerson. Have you ever met him before?
I haven't. But you know what's funny is I worked with him a lot when I worked in radio because he was at Slate, and my job was to basically get the Slate people on the show I worked on day to day. So I actually worked with him a fair amount back then, just, you know, like scheduling things and calling him when it was time for the interview. Would you like me to try to make the introduction?
I mean, he's a national treasure. He's just the best.
Full stop.
He's just the best. I have so much admiration for him.
What do you love so much about him?
I mostly know him from Slate's Political Gabfest, and like that is my show. And so I feel like I know the three main hosts very well and their dynamics. And he is just the sweetest guy. I could just listen to him talk forever. There's a pretty famous video of him, I guess, being interviewed, or I guess it's more of a conversation with Colbert that I love. There's a huge mutual respect society going on between the two of them. Like, everything that I'm thinking about even reading his book. I'm not a big nonfiction guy. It always sounds like work to me. But he's got a new book out called The Hardest Job in the World, I want to say, and it's about the American presidency. And it's more of a historical look, but also I think reflects on what's going on today. Anyway, I'm just being boring now, but he's just the best.
I was turning my mic down because there is a helicopter flying like so low over our neighborhood. It's like when I was doing that TV story.
And oh yeah,
they called the police on the helicopter. It's like that. I was like, is everything okay? Is that going to land in my neighbor's yard? Now it's gone off somewhere. But
now, do you think that's Border Patrol stuff?
You know, it depends on the helicopter. There's one that is Border Patrol that I see out, and they are always going. They're sort of circling the lake, which I don't. It's a lake. I don't know who they think is sneaking into the lake, like across the border. Mm. Like, it's not, you know, I don't understand that as a border. I mean, I have to be totally. You want to talk about dropping all semblance of objectivity? When I see ICE or Border Patrol vehicles, I just become filled with rage. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess we, as a country, there's some argument to having national boundaries. Like, it makes things a little less confusing, but other than just knowing, like, if I should be using the metric system or not, I don't really know if I think we should have any kind of border. We certainly don't need as much as we currently have, in my opinion. Sorry, listeners who that's going to rankle. But so when I see the Border Patrol helicopter circling a lake 60 miles from the U.S. border, I just wonder if that's the most important priority for our nation.
Well, it's probably Inslee going after somebody not wearing a mask, right? I mean, this is the real problem is.
When I was in Tenino, I saw a guy wearing a mask that said this mask is as ineffective as my governor.
Oh, my God.
But he was wearing a mask.
I know. Well, you know, that's interesting. So it just occurred to me, I got a note from somebody late last week. I can't remember what it was, but somebody said, oh, you were being sarcastic. Sorry, like, you remind me of my friend. I can never tell, like, when you're being serious or sarcastic on the show, which is a real problem because I often say mm-hmm. things that I do not mean on this show. I say things that I mean the opposite of. But, you know, the governor was on Face the Nation. I heard a clip of it on KUOW today, and the governor said, Inslee was saying to a national audience, like, if we could get everybody who's wearing a MAGA hat to also wear a mask, that would have a huge impact on where we are now. And I even thought about it, like, yeah, they could have, I mean, I wouldn't love to see it, but make MAGA masks. I'm sure somebody's got maybe a MAGA mask, but, like, they could have just leaned into it, and they could have filled us, or they could have owned me, you know? I could have seen a bunch of people, or not me, because I wouldn't see it in my neighborhood, but, like, they could have owned it and gotten people to do the right thing and still spread their hate, but no.
right. Own the libs with wearing a MAGA mask. I mean, it's so funny. I feel like it could have, you're exactly right. If at this genesis point of the mask conversation, if there could have been, if the current president would have just like walked out to a Rose Garden ceremony wearing a MAGA mask, mm-hmm. we'd be in a totally different world. I mean, do you realize, sorry, not to get like political or whatever on it, but I hadn't even thought of that till you said that. Literally, that dude walks out wearing a mask one time at the beginning of this, and everything's different mm-hmm. because his brainwashed, moronic followers then get their marching orders to be, we're wearing masks, and then everyone's just wearing masks, and then Texas is not having to reshut down. Florida is not having, Arizona, these places where there's been a massive surge. We are not seeing, you know, daily new high, positive tests on the virus. Like, all it would take from that guy, I mean, it's the bare minimum of human behavior, particularly as a leader of the free world. If one time he would have walked out with a mask on, everything in this country would be different right now, honestly.
Yeah. His probably wouldn't have old-fashioned bicycles on it like mine does. But, But again, I do think that not only him wearing a mask, but him wearing a mask that was like branded towards his thing. And he could have had a whole army of people emulating his thing and you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it would be ironic. I was going to say, you know, get a don't tread on me mask. But I guess that is kind of, I mean, that would just be ironic, I guess. Because they literally think they're being tread upon. Yeah.
But you know what I noticed? After I got done lately stalking you, I continued north on Aurora Avenue. And I was getting a little drowsy now, and so I decided to treat myself and pull off at the Dick's Drive-In way up north on Aurora. I guess maybe it's technically Edmonds. I'm not sure of the location. But I decided to pull off and treat myself to a chocolate milkshake and some French fries. And they had it, you know, all like roped off, and there were social distancing, you know, indicators, and it was, you have to wear a mask to be here. And I looked around, and every single person had a mask on. And I thought, you know what? If people want to be somewhere bad enough, they're wearing masks. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you look at you see footage from those casinos. I don't know, maybe not in Vegas, but like around here where casinos have reopened, you have to wear a mask if you're in there. Every single person's wearing a mask. Like, if people want to be somewhere bad enough, they will wear masks, right? I mean, I guess what the problem is, it's like the grocery store. Nobody other than you, Andrew, nobody really wants to be in the grocery store. Hmm. It's kind of a necessary evil for a lot of people, so maybe that's more of the Walmart.
Do you think that's different now, though? Because grocery stores were one of the only places that you could go for a while, I wonder if we've converted more people to liking the grocery store, associating it as one of the few places they're allowed to go.
I dread the grocery store, and I'm just going to be – this is just going to be me repeating something I've been saying at least once every show. But the grocery store creates so much anxiety for me because I am so angry at people not wearing masks.
Yeah,
and it's a poison inside me. Like, it is constantly – it's a constant battle for me to not confront people. And again, the thing that I took some solace in was the idea that there's even a little bit of protection for me of wearing the mask. I know that – the greater protection is for other people if I wear the mask. But there's just think about it logically. If somebody coughs and one of those droplets goes on your mask versus going into your open mouth, which is, you know, just gross to even consider. But of course, the mask is going to help a little bit. It's not 100%. But something about me knowing that I am also protecting myself a little bit, it's like, okay, now, fine, if you want to be out there not wearing masks, no problem. But I'm going to cinch my mask up even tighter before I go into the grocery store. But I actually kind of, I do sort of dread going to the grocery store because it is an emotional journey for me.
That's true. That makes a lot of sense. For me, it's like, oh, I can go out, I can go to my grocery store. But you're right. For people who already don't like the grocery store, now it's just become even more like you're worried about your own health and safety. You're also maybe just getting in your head about people walking the wrong way down the aisles like I do. Wait. Not like I do. I don't walk down the aisles the wrong way, but I do judge people who do that. And the woman who wasn't wearing a mask, the only person in the store, just this woman, just like not wearing a mask. And also like, I saw a woman who was wandering around the produce section, which is exposed food, no mask on, and then getting up to an employee asking for help with something. I'm like, you don't get help. You don't get help. Put on a mask. And then later on, I see her. She's in line, like everybody's social distancing in line, right? They have the big red circles on the ground so you know how far apart to stand. And she's doing this exercise. She's got her cart in front of her. It's already like kind of busy. It's a Sunday. Sundays are very busy at the grocery store. People are trying to socially distance. She's not wearing a mask. And while she's waiting in line, she's got her leg up on the handlebar of her grocery cart and like doing some sort of stretches. Like if you're going to go for a run and you might throw your leg up on a bike rack or something. I don't know what you runners do. But she's doing some sort of stretches in this area where it's already really complicated because of the social distance. The lines are long and awkward, and people have to kind of like, excuse me, to get through them. And she's doing calisthenics with her. I can't say that word. Shouldn't have tried it.
You said it just right.
Did it?
Calisthenics.
Calisthenics? All right. There you go.
Yeah.
Nailed it. I noticed, I've been thinking about this weekend. You did something subtle on the show Friday. I can't say the word. I can't, I don't even know how to, I say asterisk. Which is the wrong
asterisk?
Word. Asterisk. And I noticed that I said it on Friday's show, and then you came up right behind me and said it the proper way. Oh. You didn't correct me, but I feel like you were clearing the air, which is not a bad thing, but I noticed that, and it's been bugging me. I can't say that word. Anyway, this woman annoyed me.
I had a – this is a – we should go to a break, and I should not choose this avenue of conversation because I don't – it's just very dangerous, but I have been – puzzling over it since it happened, Andrew, and so the only thing I know to do with that is to share it with you, and then we can process together. So on Friday, when I was still down in Tenino, a couple of things I want to say quickly about that. There is a restaurant there called Don Juan's that is literally one of the best Mexican restaurants I have ever been to in my life. We interviewed a woman whose her dad owns it, but so she's her family owns this restaurant, and it was talking about them taking this wooden money. But when we were all done with that, then they were like, please stick around. And then they, you know, they served us lunch, which we paid for because we're journalists. But we spent the whole meal just rating which political candidate we were going to vote for. So it's kind of a 6 of 1, half dozen of the other on the objectivity scale. But No, we paid for the meal. But this the guy, Juan, who owns the place, is just a delight. And the restaurant, it's like I am seriously going to go to Tenino to go to this restaurant. They hand make everything. It's really good. Okay, free plug for them, but they were awesome. But also, we were following a woman around, this lovely woman named Lori, who was using some of this wood money that they've been printing in Tenino. She, you know, she was a bus driver who was out of work, and she was like, this really helped me. She was like, I wasn't able to get any assistance. I got some of this wood money. I've been using it. I've been able to buy, you know, a new toothbrush, which I needed. And, you know, she's like, so our crew was following her around the store from a safe distance with masks, et cetera, et cetera. And the grocery store. So then she comes out of the grocery store. And now it's where I'm going to stand with her and kind of chat about how it is using this local currency that's been created down in Tenino. And it's weird when you have a camera crew and a sound person because you attract a certain kind of person. Mm-hmm. Like some people are very repelled by you. They just want nothing to do with it. And other people, it's like a flame and they're a moth. Mm-hmm. And so we're standing there and I'm standing 6 feet from her. So I have my mask off because we're outside and I'm 6 feet away from her. But I've got my mask at the ready. Like if anyone's going to get within 6 feet of me, I'm going to put it on real quick. And this guy, he's like a delivery guy for, I forget the, if it was FedEx or UPS or whatever. This guy, he's in a delivery, or might have even been just for some product at the grocery store. But I can see he's beelining it for me. And he comes up, and he has no mask on, and he wants to talk to me. And so I quickly put my mask on. And I'm also, by the way, supposed to be doing a TV interview. But he has now pulled me out of that. And he's kind of like, yeah, man, I got to tell you. Like, first he was like, well, who are you guys with? Who are you with? And we were like, CBS. And he's like, I got to tell you. I got to tell you, man. It's like, these people are so crazy with these masks. He goes, they're trying to tell me that I have to wear a mask. He goes, I'm hearing impaired. And he did. He had two hearing aids. And he says, I'm on the list of people that don't have to wear masks. But they're trying to tell me I can't come in these places. This is a delivery guy. This guy's going everywhere not wearing a mask. And what I have been puzzling over was, like, how, if he is hearing impaired, then if other people wear masks, that could be a problem, right? Because if you're somebody who has to use lip reading as a way of understanding speech, maybe more than somebody like me, that would make sense. But why would he, this is why I'm saying this is a terrible avenue for me to go down, because I don't want to get into like speculating on people's physical characteristics or getting accidentally ableist on it. But I don't understand why, if you were a person who had difficulty hearing, why that would mean you didn't have to wear a mask.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. And I take it you didn't ask him. You just wanted to get him out of the way.
I wanted to just kind of, you know, I smiled and said, yeah, you know, what a world or something. I was worried he was going to like,
what
be
a
like,
world.
Can I be on?
Like that. If you ever just I literally used that. Do you just, that's your blow off? What a world.
I mean, it's when I just have no, I'm like, I don't know what to say. I don't want to encourage this, but I don't want to seem like I'm being too rude. So, but I probably just said, yeah, you know, crazy world or something like that. But I have been thinking about this over and over again as to why, again, if what the rules should be for him is everyone else has to wear masks with that clear window, that would seem to me to be the solution to the problem for him. It would seem to be, and by the way, his speech was completely clear and intelligible to me. Like, it, you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand why he would be on a list of people who don't have to wear masks.
I'm not sure either. I mean, maybe somebody in the listening audience knows. And like I said, I'm not going to necessarily go down this road either, because that doesn't make a lot of logical sense
to me.
Why
don't you rank the different kinds of physical differences that people have and which ones are the best and which ones are the worst?
That sounds good. And which ones am I going to endorse? I'm actually distracted right now because I'm literally going into your Twitter feed and responding to every one of your tweets with "what a world." I don't know why I've decided to do this right now,
but I love that. I wish you wouldn't have told me, so that could just be a little surprise for me later. Like 5 o'clock, slide down that dinosaur, pour myself a beer, and realize that you've just been writing "what a world" to all of my tweets.
Okay, one last thing, and then we really got to go to break. I'm looking at John Dickerson's Wikipedia page. I just called this up before because I had forgotten. Of course, he's on the Gabfest, but I didn't realize that he had gotten kind of a early attention by writing for Slate. I totally didn't even know that. I'm a latecomer.
Yeah, that's when I used
to
work with him.
And so here's a line here. It's talking about, you know, his career. He appeared each Wednesday on the Al Franken Show on Air America Radio until the show ended in 2007. And also, this is where the listeners come in. And also was a frequent guest on NPR's Day to Day, period. Now, here's what we can do. If a listener could go into here and turn that period into a comma, he was often...
Please do not.
Who's a
Please
frequent guest
not.
On NPR's Day to Day, comma, often booked by Luke Burbank,
not.
Who I know has a Wikipedia page, so you can link to Luke Burbank,
Please
comma, who hosts the daily podcast Too Beautiful to Live, which I think also is linkable with co-host Andrew Walsh, which sadly is not linkable, but still, it would get me into John Dickerson's Wikipedia page.
First of all, please write Andrew a Wikipedia page.
Yeah, let's start. You know what? Let's start there.
No, the reason that mortifies me is because when I read, I've talked about this many times on the program, but like I can tell you when I'm reading a Wikipedia page about, let's say, a song or a movie or even a person, I can tell when somebody has gone in and added their own kind of connection to it, because it's like, you know, it'll be like the song Drop It Like It's Hot was a big hit for who does that song?
That's Pharrell, right? Isn't that Pharrell?
Snoop? Yeah, with Snoop.
Yeah.
Like, and it'll be like, you know, it was a big hit for Pharrell featuring Snoop Dogg or whatever, whoever officially gets the credit for that. And then you'll be, and it'll go like, and the, with microphones that were set up by Terry Johnson or some kind of like tiny little detail that nobody who's not Terry Johnson cares about. And you just know, I mean, God bless Terry Johnson, this hypothetical person, but like, I can just tell when there's a footnote that's way too specific that the person who is the footnote is about went and put it in. And it's going to be so mortifying if John Dickerson goes on his Dickopedia page. Ooh, that sounds dirtier than I expected.
I liked where you're going with that. I blame society for making that a dirty word.
Thank you. But no, if John Dickerson goes on his Wikipedia page and sees that my name is now weirdly attached to something, he could think that I was like, let me just make sure. I mean, although, by the way, I did bring it up on the show, so maybe it is important to me, Andrew. That's what's messed up.
Well, I was asking if maybe. You could get me in.
I'll see what I can do. I'm still resentful of John Dickerson that he got to go to Venice, Italy, and do the annual Venice is Sinking story that is, to me, would be the ultimate reporting assignment. And about once a year, some network sends, I think 60 Minutes and Sunday Morning have themselves done like four or five stories on the exact topic of the fact that Venice is sinking and is, you know, going to be in big trouble. The floods every year in Venice are now more extreme. And of course, it's all because of climate change. Maybe if I get that plum assignment next time, then relations between me and Dickerson will thaw a little bit.
Let me just say this. If there was someone selling marijuana in our neighborhood, we'd know about it.
Hey, speaking of climate change, when we come back, I'll do this top story about Amazon and the new name of the arena in Seattle. So stick around for that coming up on TBTL.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
After we went into the break, I think you and I both did the same thing, Andrew, just looked down at our clocks and we're like, it's an hour, we're practically an hour into this. We haven't even gotten to the stories yet.
We're supposed to put two breaks into every show. We've produced a podcast twice as long as some other podcast, and we haven't even taken our first break yet.
And we've said nothing interesting.
Nothing. I mean, I was so close with the chief label maker shit, but like that was it.
How about the part where I Googled things quietly?
That is good.
Amazon is going to rename what used to be called Key Arena. I don't even want to like use the name Key Arena because basically KeyBank defaulted on that loan. They ultimately did not, if I remember right, pay off the naming rights. And yet, because that arena was in limbo for so long, they were just getting free. Everyone just kept calling it Key Arena, even though either they had not made good on the payment or, you know, the payments were over, but like now it was long past the period of time that they had purchased the rights, if that makes any sense. Like it was kind of this ghost building, and absent any other thing to call it, we just kept calling it the name of the people who had once paid money for it.
Yeah, that makes sense. But they defaulted on it when the team went away, when the Sonics
I don't know that for a fact. I remember there being some confusion around it. There was some reason why it rankled me to keep calling it that. Now it's going to be called Climate Pledge Arena. Amazon has bought it. They announced on Instagram last week that the name is to serve as a regular reminder of the urgent need for climate action. It's going to be supposedly the first net zero carbon certified arena in the world. It will generate zero waste from its operations or its events. And the hockey ice will use reclaimed rainwater. It is going to, of course, house the Seattle Storm, our WNBA team, and also our as yet unnamed NHL team. Why is it, Andrew, that even though this is a good thing, Climate Pledge Arena sounds deeply dorky to me?
Well, to me, it's terrible because, yes, Amazon is doing some green friendly things in this particular building, but Amazon as a company is one of the has one of the worst impacts on the environment in 2020. Like them as a company, their whole business model, from the packaging to the we're going to send a truck to deliver a toothbrush to your door, is terrible for the environment. They could do so much more for the environment instead of buying the naming rights for this arena and then saying, aren't we the best because we're I mean, I know that's not exactly what you're going for. It's a clunky name and a God knows how it'll be nicknamed, because I don't think people are going to it that. But I also just think it's like ironic isn't even the right word. Infuriating.
Oh, wow. See, I hadn't really thought of it from that perspective. And I mean, I think you're right. I was just thinking of it more like, I think I just don't like these names that are usually it's obviously typically corporate. In other words, mm-hmm. it'll be like Breakpoint Teleconference Arena, or, you know, mm-hmm. like yeah. there's one I forget that has like just these very like it's one thing. Even Safeco Field, I'll give them credit. Now, I guess it's called
T-Mobile Park.
T-Mobile Park. I don't know. I guess I'm used to it now. Mm-hmm. Those things don't sound that weird to me, but when it's a company, when it's galleryfurniture.com, galleryfurniture.com arena, like the more businessy and just totally detached from anything that would be normal human mm-hmm. speech, that gets, you know, that's the name of the arena. I get a little turned off, and I guess you're right. It's clunkiness kind of bothers me, but I hadn't thought about the hypocrisy as well.
Think we could nickname it though? I mean, because, like, okay, when it became CenturyLink, people are like, we'll call it the Clink, which I don't think anybody does. Right. And wait, is it – that's the football stadium for the
Clink.
Seahawks. Do they say Clink? And that's what it currently is, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Safeco Field, some people would say the Safe.
Yeah.
Not a lot, but, you know, like – and again, that kind of Safe, it's, you know, home base. It's like there's some kind of sort of things that make sense with that. Yeah, Climate Pledge Arena. I mean, I guess you're just going to – what? Sea Pledge.
Want to head to the Pledge?
Pledge.
Want to
Pledge Arena.
Pledge.
The hockey team. Another hot night on the ice for the Seattle Evergreens. Maybe that would actually make sense, right?
Now you're saying for the hockey team name. Now we have to.
They haven't named
up
the team yet, because people want to name it. The Kraken was one of the names that was being bandied about. If you went with Evergreens, that would kind of make sense, right? Like it's kind of
like
naturey
that.
And
that's kind of good, Luke.
It's the Evergreen State.
Yeah. I like that. But I was actually siding with the Seattle Freeze, but I don't think that you really like that.
That's kind of funny. I could go with that. But yeah, I don't know what here's the question though. It's hypocritical of Amazon, but wouldn't it be worse if they just went with Amazon Arena? Like,
no,
in other words,
you mean but still implemented all these great things for the building?
Well, what I mean is, like, Amazon, obviously their business model creates a huge carbon footprint. And that's your issue, is that it's hypocrisy for them to remind us about this climate problem while also making a bunch of money off of making it worse. But even though it's hypocritical, isn't it still better that they're at least doing lip service than not doing lip service? Like if 10 people in America each year, when they hear Climate Pledge Arena, it reminds them that the climate is changing and they have to try to do something about it. If even 10 people, isn't that better than it being called Amazon Arena?
I don't know. I do find, I mean, it's almost like the mask argument, right? Like if people are specious of the mask, but if it even just, you know, saves one person, like, isn't that enough? And of course, for that, there's no problem with it. I just don't know that naming it Climate Pledge Arena will get anybody to do anything. Again, aside from the actual implementations or the things that they're implementing for this building that are good for the environment, no trash cans, only going to have recycle and compost because no trash will be allowed. Like, I think that stuff is good. But I don't know that the name does any good. I think the name just is just lip service, and maybe even potentially, I want to make my point here so hard that I'm going to say something that I'm sure does not withstand scrutiny at all, but I almost feel like it does do harm because it lets Amazon say, look, we're a green company, we're doing this thing, while it gives them cover just to continue to just be one of the shittiest organizations in the world.
Right. Yeah, I guess that would be a bad effect of this would be, instead of making real change, they can just put this weird name on this arena and call it good. I don't know. I think this is kind of a cool idea, though. Tickets to the WNBA and NHL games will also work as free public transportation rides. Did you see that little?
Yeah, I thought that's pretty cool. Yep.
That's kind of a clever idea. I hadn't thought of that. I mean, I don't know, man. My relationship with Amazon is so complicated because like a lot of people, I find the convenience to be very alluring, you know. I order a lot of things through Amazon still, and I don't know, maybe if I was, I mean, probably what we should all do is stop using Amazon, right? I mean, is that what we really should be doing, I guess?
Well, I mean, I would say the first thing is if you don't want to be a hypocrite, don't create a podcast based on an Amazon show. I mean, I think that's the first thing that we could all do.
Oh, yeah, right.
Like, I mean, I'm saying that to point out the irony of me, like, shitting on Amazon here when, you know, we love the show Patriot, which is an Amazon Prime show, and the only way I'm able to watch it is because clearly the audience knows that I give money to Amazon to watch that show and to do other things that Prime allows. Now, I was never a huge, like, I'm not, like you, I think, as far as ordering things from Amazon. And again, I kind of like going to the grocery store. So that kind of gives you a sense of where my brain is at as far as like kind of delivery and convenience. I do get stuff from Amazon. The other day I needed some computer related things, hard drives and various stuff. And I actually drove to what's it called? It's such a shell of itself. It's so bad. Best Buy. It's amazing going into a Best Buy, especially in the middle of a pandemic. So, you know, I tried. I put on my mask. I went out. I looked for a couple of different things. Best Buy didn't have anything that I wanted. That store is a shell of itself before the pandemic hit. So what did I do? I came home and I researched exactly what I wanted and I ordered it on Amazon. Now, I don't do that often. I order something maybe once a month from Amazon. But I do it and I take advantage of it. And certainly Genevieve does. She's the reason we have Prime. And I don't think it's safe for me to say I don't use Prime that much, but Genevieve is buying us stuff from Prime. I'm like the guy who says he quit smoking but just bums other people's cigarettes all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I do want to point out my own hypocrisy here. This is not an Amazon zero family. But I do I do have a lot of beef with Amazon, and we're talking about climate change stuff here, but I think also a lot of it comes from I don't think that they're a very good neighbor, and I don't think they pay their taxes. I think they should pay taxes locally and on the federal level as well. So I just have a lot of issues with the company itself. But yeah, it's also a really good service. Like, there's a reason why it's successful.
The thing that gets the complicated thing about stuff like Amazon is, and just being alive in the world, or being alive at least in America, and being of a certain privileged class, is we are all walking contradictions and hypocrites. There's so much injustice in our country and so much injustice in the world that the fact that any of us just live in a normal home and, like, you know, take showers and drive to work, or even, you know, like, get on the bus, like, really what we should all be doing, and I'm not saying this to be extreme, but it's like we should all have sold almost all of our possessions, and we should all live in a very, very, very simple dwelling that is having less impact, and we should all be giving away more of the money that we have, because there's always somebody who needs it much more than we do. And then, but what ends up happening is, and we should all be having a smaller carbon footprint, but we all have to kind of make this decision on the fly about where are we going to draw our personal lines. And that's like the part that troubles me, is it's just kind of like, because nothing I do is actually going to be enough unless I become like Siddhartha and I literally sell all my possessions and I sit on the side of the road in the lotus position. Like, that would be that's what I really should be doing. And I'm not doing it. I don't want to do it, you know?
Yeah. And again, and I know I've already said this, but I want to make it clear too, because I feel like I'm getting on a high horse here. Like, I am not doing half the things I'm not even doing a minuscule amount of things. I get on this show and I complain about things, and I throw bombs by saying that Amazon's one of the worst companies in the world right now, which I think there's an argument for, but, you know, I don't, you know, I listen to Chris Hayes's podcast for more information on that, right? Like, they did a great episode on the impact of Amazon. And I don't know what I'm talking about half the time. So I'm with you. I don't want to make it sound like I'm living some sort of virtuous life, but I do. There is something very personal for me about how much I dislike Amazon. And I think a big part of it does have to do with the fact that I live in Seattle and I sort of see the impact of the company as a neighbor here.
I also think it's kind of funny that you're the person who doesn't really want to socialize that much. You'd rather stay home, but you kind of love going to the grocery store. And I'm the person who's very social, but I totally dread going out for errands. I don't like doing errands, and I think you kind of like errands. Maybe that's the amount of social interaction you want to have.
I wonder if that's a difference, though. I mean, I think that maybe those are playing into the same thing, right? Like, because going to the grocery store is, like, it's still a, you know, it's a solitary adventure. And I maybe feel like I'm in control there, maybe.
Right.
And then to the degree that I do socialize or, you know, talk to the person at the checkout, you know, that's like, okay, that's a little bit of socializing. That's all I need. I'm good for another week.
Right. And but then you can leave when your groceries are bagged up, as opposed to if you're at a barbecue with me, you're trapped.
Exactly. I can't ghost on the grocery store.
I can see it in your eyes as once again, you're withholding my beloved ritual of you knocking my cap off and saying, how's it going, chief?
One of these days I'm going to do that. You're going to flip out. You don't like being touched. I don't see coming up behind you and flipping my hand on the back of your head. I don't see you being cool with that.
Oh, I wouldn't care. Particularly now that we've established it as a joke. The company that bought Segway in 2015 is a Chinese company called Ninebot. They've announced that they will halt production of the Segway PT, which is short for personal transporter, in July. 21 staffers will be laid off at its Bedford, New Hampshire plant. Now, I don't want to be glib. It's sad that people lost their jobs. Doesn't that strike you as a very small number of people that are making the Segways for the world?
What's the number again?
21 employees were working in Bedford, New Hampshire, making these.
What? Yes, that seems incredibly small. I'm a few things. I know that Dean Kamen is from New Hampshire, and he's the one who invented this thing. I was living there at the time and covering this to a degree as a producer. So, you know, I remember that very well. I didn't know that it was sold to a Chinese company, but I guess that makes sense. I'm actually more surprised to know that it's still being made in New Hampshire if the ownership is overseas. So that's interesting. But yeah, the fact that it's 21 people, I wonder, could there be plants elsewhere and they're only reporting on the American jobs?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, this is from CNN. This is the full paragraph. China-based Ninebot, which acquired Segway in 2015, will halt production of the PT, short for personal transporter, on July 15th. 21 staffers will be laid off at its Bedford, New Hampshire plant. That's it. That's the full graph. So,
interesting.
I mean, I don't think that there were that many Segways being sold, hence them eliminating it. It's kind of funny to me, too, that somebody wanted to buy Segway in 2015. Didn't they see the trend? Like, you buy this company and then 5 years later, you're like, yeah, no, we're not going to make these. And when you know, the personal transporter is the thing we all think of when we think of a Segway scooter, the thing that you see mall cops on, the thing that you know, if you're doing a touristy thing around Seattle or D.C., as Addie and I once did, that's the thing they're eliminating. Apparently, well, first of all, they're not cheap. Some of them can go up to as much as $10,000.
Wow.
Which was that price point. I mean, the batteries, when it first came out, the batteries were like $1,000 because the technology just was expensive. And so this never really took off. I mean, they became in a certain way ubiquitous because, again, if you go to a touristy place, you will see people doing Segway tours. And if you're in a certain kind of, if you're at a golf course maybe, or if you're, you know, I don't know, you see them out in society. It's like, it's not like they were a total flop, but they never lived up to the promise that, Andrew, you and I have talked about many times, which was if you're a certain age, you remember, and particularly if you were working in journalism at the time, the news of the Segway scooter, the sort of sketchy reports of some device, and the fact that, like, Bill Gates and I think Bezos and Paul Allen were, like, called in to see this, and one of them emerged saying this is going to change the way they build cities. I mean, I really thought it was going to be like a hoverboard. I mean, it was like, have they figured out an anti-gravity thing? Like, what is it? And then it was obviously this Segway, which,
you know, I'm reading a book about anti-gravity. I can't put it down.
Why is that getting funnier the second time? I don't know.
I can't believe that anti-gravity came up again in the show. I would have held off on that one if I had known. I mean, that was the thing. It was is heralded as literally something that would change cities forever, that like the design, urban design would forever be changed by this thing. And then it came out, and frankly, it looks really dorky. I'm not saying that you can't do things that look dorky. I look dorky when I'm not riding a Segway, so whatever. But it just seemed like it was talked about in this way that it was going to be so revolutionary and cool. And then you know, it became kind of the butt of jokes from Job on Arrested Development to, I believe, George W. Bush, didn't he fall off of one famously?
Yes.
And so it just kind of became like a real kind of a dorky looking thing. I'm going back and forth, by the way, Segway, when it was bought by Ninebot, it was going to move its jobs to China, and I'm now looking at the union leader, the Manchester union leader. It looks like, I think through public pressure, they ended up reversing that decision and keeping the jobs in New Hampshire.
So those were the people making the Segways.
I guess so.
That we think of as the Segways.
Yep.
Now, Ninebot, this company, said that the Segway PT accounted for only 1.5% of its revenue. So what they're more into are these scooters that they make, that actually some, you know, like electric scooters that some police departments are actually starting to use, which is kind of, you commit a crime and then you're running away and then the cop is scootering after you. At that point, you just stop running because it's so comical. There's something inherently un-cop-like. Oh, by the way, that's also mentioned in this article. The guy who's in charge of Ninebot, or their spokesperson, said, recent discussions about police department funding in the wake of George Floyd's death did not impact the company's decision. Because that's, I mean, that would actually be logical to think about, that, you know, the defund the police movement, if the people at Ninebot were like, yeah, we ain't going to sell any more Segways. So let's just go ahead and shut that down.
Is there also something to be, I don't know, I'm just asking, I didn't read this article. Are they almost built so well that it's not a great business model? Like, not the planned obsolescence that we're used to, right, with our cell phones, where after so many years, you have to buy a new one. Like, I wonder if these things were just built well, because, I mean, that was Cayman's whole thing, right? Like, creating things that can kind of last and be – it wasn't a cheap little trinket.
Right, it wasn't. I don't know about the durability factor. Famously, he was trying to build a self-balancing wheelchair when he invented this, because of the gyroscope technology that kind of keeps it always balanced. Although I will say, and I said this, I don't know, a year ago when I was in D.C. visiting Addy, and we went on a Segway tour where there was, I believe, a total of 4 crashes.
Yeah.
2 of which were intense and dangerous. This notion that it's impossible to fall off of a Segway is not true.
Yeah.
Addy fell off. I don't want to embarrass her too much, but she happened to fall off one. And I was like, oh my God, I hope she's okay. She was fine. And I was like, do you want to keep doing this? Do you want to just, this was like a block into it. We're on like a street. But then this other gal from Texas took not one, not two, but I think maybe 3 spills, and they got increasingly bad. And it was cold, too, and it was like, we literally ended it early, which the guy said he'd never done before. Wow. Because these are burly pieces of machinery to be in. So, you know, it was, we're zooming around like Capitol Hill and along the, like, the mall in Washington, D.C., where the Smithsonian and all that stuff is. And it's like, if you get hit by someone who's driving a Segway, if you're walking, that thing is heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like a little tiny thing. Like, it's a big piece of machinery to give someone zero training on and then turn them loose in crowded areas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, was what my takeaway from it was.
Yeah.
And yeah, the price point, it sounds like the price point was always a problem. Like, basically, it's supposed to replace the car, but it's as expensive as a car in some cases. If you're spending $10,000 on it, it's like, at that point, somebody might just opt to buy a car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I also wonder if there are other just little scooters that are less whiz-bangy out there that people are using. Because, like, the tourism thing is kind of interesting. Like, it was a great way to show people around D.C. or maybe Boston. I don't know. Now, I haven't heard about, like, bird scooters being used for tourism in that way. But it does seem like you come to a city, like, what has really actually changed cities in a shorter period of time and may continue to change cities when things return to normal is the you know, undocked bicycle and undocked electric scooter game. Like, that actually is, like, cities have had to implement new rules and laws and mm-hmm. thinking about the ways that they build their cities based on those.
Well, right. I mean, and what I have said, I think I was in Austin and somebody was just bombing down a hill on one of these scooters, probably drunk. I mean, it was at that time of night when people are drinking. And I remember just thinking, like, it's a miracle that people are not dying left and right on these scooters, because they're driving in the street really fast, often after drinking a bunch, with like no training. I don't even think helmets are necessary, depending on where you are. Helmets aren't even, and I'm like not trying to be no fun. I'm just looking at it like, I'm surprised this isn't leading to more injuries for people, because, you know, people are, we're generally klutzy. Mm-hmm. You know, you put us on some motorized scooter, and in fact, Carrie and I were driving to the dog park, I think it was like yesterday, and we were going, we were basically driving on the street that's very hilly, and we saw what we thought was like a 60-year-old woman just racing down the hill on an electric scooter. As we got closer, we realized it was actually a woman who was more like in her 20s. She just had blonde hair, so from a ways away, we couldn't tell if her hair was blonde or white. I don't know if that made it better that she was younger. I guess maybe theoretically her equilibrium is a little more on point. But I was like, that can't be good. No one should be going down that hill that fast on a mechanical scooter.
Yeah. I don't know what injury numbers are actually like. I mean, I love seeing cities that use them well. Like when we went down to LA during the holidays last year, I was amazed, man. When I lived in LA, it was only, you know, it wasn't that long ago, but the scooter revolution hadn't begun yet. And then we were right in the...
It will not be televised, for the record.
The revolution will be scooterized. We were right in the Hollywood area, and like so many people were using it in the middle of the day, as, you know, as you would hope they would, as like kind of, you know, micro transportation from here and there. And there was, it was actually hard to find one that wasn't being used. So, and there were a lot of them. So I don't know. It's one of those things where like cars are really dangerous too. I don't even want to get into that. I've been thinking a little bit about the coronavirus too, like the idea of reopening society as slowly as possible to prevent an uptick in deaths is good, but also knowing that you can't lock it down forever. Like if you lock everything down forever, then maybe you can reach zero infection rate. But obviously, as a society, I've been thinking like, well, we always have to make these deals where we know that allowing people to drive their own cars will create more deaths, but we can't outlaw driving at this point, right? So we're always kind of like balancing. Is the word I was looking for balance? That's such a hard word to remember. Super Bowl week, Luke. Anyway, we're always kind of on, you know, balancing those scales between public safety and what's good overall, right?
Right. It sounds like what you're saying is like, look, we allow automobiles, even though it's, you know, one of the leading causes of death in this country. But we've just said, well, that's what it takes to have a functioning world, at least at this moment. And with the coronavirus stuff, it's like, well, what's the math on that? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we'd like it to be zero deaths or zero new cases, but also people, you know, this is our only spin on this big blue marble for each of us, and people need to be able to live their life to some degree. That's why the mask thing, and we can move on, but that's why the mask thing makes me so crazy. I literally said this on Friday, but it's like, for all the people that want the world to get back to normal as quickly as possible, it's as simple as wearing a mask, it would seem.
Yeah.
That's the oddest part of the pushback on that.
Yes, the seatbelt in this situation, right? Like, okay, yes, we know that cars are really dangerous and they can cause accidents, but we can't, you know, get rid of cars totally, but let's try to mitigate it a little bit, you know? Let's regulate it so that they're not spewing quite as much stuff out into the environment. Let's regulate it so that you as the driver wear this thing that keeps you somewhat safer in case something does go wrong, and that's exactly what the mask is there for.
I wonder if all this controversy has led to more people or less people streaming the Jim Carrey movie The Mask.
That's interesting.
If there's been any kind of impact on that.
Probably. I mean, if so, then you're right about the climate change arena. Just by having the word mask out there or climate change arena out there does impact consumer behavior.
Isn't there like a third mask that's like Jamie Kennedy?
I didn't even know, like, there was a second mask.
I believe they made a third one that Jim Carrey was like, yeah, no. And I believe it's the actor Jamie Kennedy in it, which is incredible to me that that's something that happened.
There is The Mask, which came out in 1994. There is Revenge of the Mask that came out in 2018. That's a lot of time between the two of them. Was there could there have been just the two, though?
Oh, there was. But there is one that Jamie Kennedy was in, right? I'm not crazy.
I am. Hold on. Everybody Google that.
Hold on. Let's Google this. Son of the Mask.
Oh,
in
okay.
2005, starring Jamie Kennedy. Yes.
Interesting.
And that is where they have a baby who gets the mask.
Oh, my God. And it gets worse from there because it looks like Revenge of the Mask was the third one. And it literally, whoever is the star of the third one, when you go to the IMDb page, they don't even, like, the star of the movie doesn't even have a picture in their icon. Like, that's, it's somebody named Michael Bugard.
Son of the Mask, 2005 superhero comedy film. The budget was from $84 to $100 million. It cost you $100 million to make Son of the Mask, wow, starring Jamie Kennedy. By the way, box office, $59.9 million. I'm actually surprised. That seems like one of those things that's such a bad idea for a movie, but when you look at the box office, it's going to be like, oh, shit, it did $300 million worldwide because, like, the Mask brand is so strong.
You know what I'm realizing here? And I know I realize that you and I are both kind of Googling things and kind of talking past each other, but you know what I'm realizing is this thing that I'm looking at, Revenge of the Mask, it looks like it's going back. I didn't realize that The Mask was based on a comic book, and it doesn't look like this is going to be part of the same franchise. This is some bloody... it's called a bloody adaptation, blends the story from the Dark Horse comic series, The Mask. And so I think that maybe this was a comic book that the Jim Carrey, you know, the Jim Carrey, right, vehicle kind of was a glossy version of. And now people are just going back and making horror movies based on the original one. All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
Andrew, do we have any emails or V-mails that are smoking?
Oh, God. yes. Just a couple of real quickies here, actually. You had asked...
my favorite part of the show so far.
your joke or my reaction to it. My
both.
Utter exhaustion. you were trying to remember where our Dreamcatcher song came from. As a matter of fact, I should have played it here, which I think I can do. Dreamcatcher Andrew theme right now.
You look like a Dreamcatcher came to life.
And I wasn't sure. You had said a listener had sent that, and I did not realize that. I thought you just found it online. And it's from our friend Chris, who runs the Tacoma Little Theater there in Tacoma.
Oh,
you'll,
yeah,
remember Chris. He invited Genevieve and me to watch the final Game of Thrones episode in the theater.
Oh, yeah.
It was so great. It's such a great memory. And so Chris says, I'm the one who sent you the Dreamcatcher once upon a time. I directed it for one of my youth programs. It's called Dreamcatcher, written by John Jacobson, John, who is known for Dream Hands and Dream Feet. You've probably seen this guy. There are a lot of GIFs of him. He does this thing. It's some sort of children's programming, but he's in front of a green screen. He's just like doing a really, really dorky dance. I'll bet you've seen GIFs of it a million times. Chris says that he's composed hundreds of youth musicals. Also, if we ever need a venue for a show, we can hit up Chris for the Tacoma Little Theater. I was pausing there just wondering if we'll ever do a live show again, and actually what that means for Chris and all of his compatriots there. I hope everybody is doing okay.
It's been, like live venues have been decimated. Obviously, you can't have events. And also, my friend Jim down in Portland, he's one of the owners of a bunch of places like Revolution Hall and Mississippi Studios. And he was telling me that they're also, because of various weird things with the sort of relief money, a lot of live venues are not really covered. So they're sort of sitting there dark. They can't do business. Actually, the people from Littlefield had reached out to us, Andrew, because we did TBTL Live at Littlefield in New York. And they had said, hey, you guys want to try to do a virtual thing? Like, they're trying to figure out ways to continue to do stuff and turn some kind of a profit. But I feel sorry for myself that, LiveWire, we've got to do it remotely. But it's like, at least we can still keep doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's tough, too, right? Like, you want to trying to recreate a live experience at home, but also support the venues that would have been holding them is a thing to do. Like, I'm thinking about how we did our silly little TBTL talent show a few weeks ago, and we just did it on YouTube. Maybe we should have, I don't know, I'm just dragging us here, but maybe we should have thought of some way to team up with like a local venue that we have a relationship with, and maybe had given some of the proceeds to them. Although we didn't sell tickets for that, which is kind of a difference there too, or I guess whatever. But I do know that people are doing that. There's the little Grand Illusion cinema in the U District that I've told you about, a movie theater, and what they're doing and some other kind of art house movie theaters are doing are saying, hey, you can buy these, but buy these movies, stream them at home, but buy them via us, and you can support our venue, which is a good idea.
That's what the Pickford Film Center up here in Bellingham that I love, that's what they're doing as well. And I actually haven't done it yet, but I need to. Is just start streaming stuff through them, just honestly to keep some money going into their coffers, because that is an awesome organization.
I'll tell you what, let's leave it here because I feel myself falling apart, losing my words. A couple of things have really broken down already here in the second half of the show. So keeping on the Dreamcatcher theme, we got a note here from our friend Douglas in Brooklyn. I like to call him Dougie Boy. I think that's what he goes by, right? And he says, I think Joseph Arthur is amazing, so you could use this as the new Dreamcatcher theme. Now, I don't know who Joseph Arthur is. This is a link to a video on Facebook. It looks like it's a man playing a guitar and singing. Maybe we can go out with this and consider it as a dream.
This is a song that involves the word dream, so maybe it could be our dream, a new Dreamcatcher theme added to the repertoire. By the way, he's from Akron, Ohio, Joseph Arthur.
Oh, you're already seeing this?
I just Googled him.
Oh, wow.
And I actually, usually I try to stay quiet while I'm Googling so the listeners can go on the journey with me. But in this case, I just kind of jumped right to the end of the story.
Oh, interesting.
And Googled him. He looks like a singer-songwriter from Akron.
And I guess the song is called Dreamcatcher.
Okay. We'll go out with this. Who sent this in?
This is from Dougie Boy Jr. in Brooklyn. Douglas.
DBJ.
Yes, right, exactly. So I have never heard this. I have no idea what I think of this. Also, I don't know that we really want to change the Dreamcatcher theme song, but certainly we'll go out with this. I'm happy.
It always, it can't hurt to have another arrow in the quiver.
That's true.
So we'll go out with that. Thanks, Doug, for the suggestion. And thanks to everybody for listening. We're going to be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you, so please do tune in for that. Until then, enjoy your Monday. Stay safe. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
And I bet you we were best friends in another life. Sometime before. If you could be, then I could be. Then we could be. Let's try and see it through. True, promise me you'll notice me and wait and see how I always notice you when I'm true. Downtown on the boulevard, dancing cheek to cheek with your girl. On the street, They said you was hot, but when we met you were soft as lead, saying pretty things to my head like I love you more than anyone I've ever known.
Are we seriously going to break at 51? I just looked down at the clock.
Holy shit.
Power out.